Afternoon, coaches. Welcome to the Daily Locker Room Podcast. We have Daniel and Ryan back again for another review of the championship action. A very busy weekend, lads, and many, many people. You could probably argue, Ryan, a lot of people could maybe argue there's too much football on, you know, because you're trying to sort of watch everything. And I know you were in Killarney at the weekend. Is that right? You were down in Killarney.
I was down in Killarney on Saturday. Yep.
You're a well-traveled man, but you're a well-traveled man. I seen St. Ledger's Instagram as well. I think he'd paints over the weekend there somewhere too, but we'll ask him about that later in the show.
I can watch all the games back on Sunday, unfortunately.
Watch it back. But Ryan, I suppose, look, if we start with Galway, we'll come to Killarney in a second, but we start with Galway and Derry, obviously the big game of the weekend, the one that everyone was eagerly anticipating. Really thought Derry, Ryan, after, you know, being knocked out of the Ulster Championship, you probably had a perception saying this is not a bad thing. They've had time to do work. Now, they went to Portugal. I don't know what went on in Portugal. There's rumours of maybe a fallout between certain players or whatever. I don't know how true that is. You know, you can only go by what you hear. But it just didn't seem a really joined performance from Derry, Ryan. And I know even the ill-discipline of McInnes, like, you know, that what he done was obviously, you know, it's unforgivable what you do when you do that situation in such a big game. But it didn't look themselves, Ryan. It didn't look themselves, Derry.
Aye, and I suppose, Stephen, once you do lose a game like that, and they obviously lost the last against Donegal, then these rumours will start coming out. How true they are, I'm not too sure. Only probably people within Derry will know. What I would say is, you were probably expecting a massive reaction. Yeah. Derry were able to go away, you know, reset, maybe look at where things went wrong against Donegal. And probably most people thought, look, they're going to go up and they're going to catch Galway here. That was my opinion anyway. And based on what I've seen of the game now, I didn't see all of it, but what I've seen, I thought a lot of Derry's big players looked jaded. It looked like the hunger wasn't there from a lot of them. And obviously, the McInnes sending off was a massive turning point. But what I would say, Stephen, is you often find silly things happening like that whenever players are maybe frustrated or maybe they're overtrained, you know, and I just thought that sending off kind of reflected where Derry's at now. Some people would feel that Derry's season is gone, that they peaked for potentially that league final. They went after the league, obviously, a lot, peaked for the league final, and now they have a serious, serious battle in their hands to, you know, they have to go and beat Armagh. So, look, a lot of the big players, I've said this already, a lot of the big players probably didn't perform. You look at Conor Glass, obviously we've mentioned the influence he's had both club and county. I thought he looked very, very tired.
Jaded.
And Paul Connery then goes and gets man of the match from midfield, kicks not three. So I think if Derry were going to be winning these big games, they needed these boys really firing. And McInnes getting sent off, Glass probably not firing. Brendan Rodgers, obviously, he kicked the point, but I don't think he had the same influence that he had in other games. And the other thing is, a lot of Derry squad now, they have depth, but they're being stretched. Like Doherty didn't start. Yeah. Potential injury, Owen McAvoy injury. So I think where Niall Loughlin was another guy that didn't seem to feature at all. So, Derry are probably in a place now where they thought, Jesus, we've a battle here. And this wasn't their ideal preparations going to the All-Ireland.
Yeah, and you know what, lads? Like, Daniel, the injury, we're talking about injuries. Like, a lot of it's down to time and ledge. Like, Galway had their injuries early in the year. You know, and Donegal had their injuries early in the year. And then all of a sudden, you know, these men are starting to come back around the business end of the season. Whereas Derry probably hit the ground running ledge very early this year in the Division 1. Maybe they shot their boat, maybe in Division 1, you know, and maybe these injuries now are as a result of working off a very thin squad over the last number of years. But Daniel, Galway, like, you know, we have, I obviously would have looked at Galway very closely when it was common at the time. Like, fabulous footballers. Paul Conroy, a Rolls Royce of a player, very, very underrated midfield. Not underrated, but probably doesn't get enough recognition that he deserves. John Maher, big, big, powerful, physical man. Matthew Tierney, brilliant left foot. You've Finnerty, you've Walsh, you've Comer. It's a serious forward line. You've got the Kelly brothers, you know. Gleeson seems to have had his act together and goes. Like, Galway are now ledge proper force to be reckoned with after probably being written off coming out of the National League.
Yeah, it highlights the importance of your good players. You know, for all the you know, we obviously emphasize coaching an awful lot here in this, but the reality is your coaching will get you to a point, but it's your better players being able to do things at a higher pace, at a higher tempo for longer is the difference. You know, and timing is a huge part of it. Like, in fairness, like, to Derry, they're a bit decimated at the moment. You know, and like, prior to the McInnes sending off, I think they had five attacks and got four shots off. You know, so. Yeah. They actually started pretty well, and look, Galway's MO will be to limit the amount of shots you're getting. So in my head, I was thinking, actually, geez, Derry have started okay here, all things considered. They were getting lots and lots of shots away. And then ultimately, I do agree, though, that they still didn't look 100% right, but it was still only 3 points in it when Shane McGuigan had that shot that Gleeson saved and Galway went up and got the goal to kill it off. There wasn't a huge amount in it, but I do agree. I think they looked a little bit laboured, whereas Galway looked like they had that championship energy, that championship bounce, you know, which, like, I can always remember when the big gap in the league, when you used to have your 10 weeks that you used to get shite run out of you for the first three weeks or so, and then you used to have your bit of football, and it was getting into summertime.
Just lost you for a second there, Lech.
Looked to be there with Galway, and I thought they were very impressive. I was impressed them against Mayo because they just did a strip to back the brass tacks. And then using, as you said, like, they've got scores. I mean, Tierney scores, Conroy scores, Comer scores, like Finnerty.
There's a I'm not even mentioning Walsh. They have a lot of tools. No, that if they get the defensive side sorted out, they are a task to beat.
Yeah, no, they definitely are, Daniel. And to be fair, lads, you know, like, Galway have, like, obviously Kieran O'Neill has gone in there. You know, you have who's in the background team? You've obviously
definitely. Is it Diffley or Diffley as well? Or
you've John Dibley, you've Joyce, you've Kieran O'Neill. Like, it's an illustrious background team as well, and a lot of good coaching there too, Ryan. You know, and like, Galway are well organised, and we've got to remember that only 2 years ago, Galway came a kick of the ball away from winning this All-Ireland. Like, you know, you think of that big moment where Sean Hirshen gives the free at 16-all. All the momentum was with Galway at that stage, you know, and they kicked 18 points that day against Kerry, and our 16 points could have possibly won the game. Galway will have ambitious round of progressing and really, really probably will see themselves as contenders in this championship.
Yeah, well, what I would say, the one thing about Derry-Galway, even, you know, when Derry have been dominating Division 2 and Division 1, I think they've always struggled to beat Galway. For some reason, Galway seem to have their number on them. Galway are a big physical team as well, so obviously around the middle, there's no issues there matching, you know, Derry's Glass, Rogers, Emmett Bradley played. I think the reason why he played, obviously injuries, was number one, but Matthew Tierney is a colossal at wing half forward. So
yeah,
Derry have always struggled with Galway, and the thing about Galway is they've got brilliant forwards. So you can have all the defensive shapes that you want, but one-on-one, if you get the ball in early to these boys, you need to double up quick because they'll always have the beating of the men. So definitely, Stephen, 2 years ago, they played brilliant in All-Ireland final, were very unlucky not to win it. And you would have thought this is going to be, you know, an upward curve from there, from that moment on. And I feel, look, if it works out well, you'll be saying Galway timed it brilliantly. If Derry end up flopping throughout this campaign, you'll be saying their timing. Obviously, they're maybe overload of players, Glass coming straight back in after the All-Ireland campaign. Ethan Doherty probably wasn't as influential at the weekend as well. So I suppose from a coaching point of view, you're saying, yeah, look, it's about getting the load right, and it's about making sure that boys are able to get up for a big game. And if you ask them to get up for too many big games throughout the year, sometimes you can end up with egg in your face.
Yeah. And I think, lads, you know, probably a lot was made of the Donegal Derry game. It's sort of nearly... The fact what Donegal done the Derry Ledge probably created it's like a bubble, it's like a myth where teams are like, Derry are flying. And the more you hear that narrative, isn't it? Like, you know, it's like a team, it's like you probably at club football Ledge or Kilmacud, you know, you hear all the talk and it can get into a player's psyche then, like, geez, this Derry team are hard to stop, they're impossible to beat, you know, blah blah blah, here we go. And yet you look at what Donegal done to them, so all of a sudden other teams then Ledge are probably thinking, you know, it's only natural, and players then are sort of thinking, you know what, we can get at this team, like, and that can seep in Ledge in a group, can't it? Like,
definitely. And as you say, yeah, the myth gets burst once, and all of a sudden, you know, like you often think of that really good Dublin team, and obviously it's not a myth around them, you know, they're obviously one of the best teams to ever play. But you think of how close Mayo got on so many occasions. All that would have taken was one defeat in one of those games. One point swing either way, and all of a sudden it's a completely different facade, you know. But it's I think Derry will still have a little squeak at some stage, you know. But with McInnes now being out, and even from a coaching point of view, how hard do you train in these 2 weeks? Like, how hard do you put? Like, they still have work to do on the field because they've obviously got a bit of transition of players. But then at the same time, you're trying to regain that freshness. So that's going to be a really tricky balance to find. And obviously, the group they have is not ideal. Like, you'd still fancy them to get out. Like, with three coming out, you'd still fancy them to come out of it, you know, regardless. But kind of makes you wonder. are they, did they work really hard in Portugal, say to themselves, look, we'll get a win to get through and take what comes in the next round? Like, maybe, but that's a risky game as well. Like, you know, who could you be facing when you go into the quarters, you know?
Yeah, well, obviously the team that wins the group, lads, get an extra week's rest, you know, the quarter final, but that sometimes can't be advantageous either. Like, if you're coming off the back of a win, you know, in a playoff game, you've got a lot of momentum, and it's just a week to week management thing then, you know. So that can be advantageous. Like, but certainly, Ryan, you know, from a Derry perspective, like, Brawley had an article in the paper, like, and we talked about narratives last week, you know, and I get a bit of stick. I think a few boys were paranoid about the whose club I was talking about last week. It was indirectly. It was actually a club in Armagh I was speaking about. But it's funny because, like, you look at the narrative now, Ryan, the pressure's now on Derry, and there's pressure on Mickey Hart. So all of a sudden, from being everything being perfect, and it's so hard, Ryan, in coaching to protect the players from that, because, you know, I remember the famous story about Alex Ferguson when he first came to Man United. Me and you were both United fans, and he was really struggling. And he went to Sir Matt Busby at the time, and he said, you know, like, I'm getting hammered in the media. The papers are saying this, the papers are saying that. And Busby used to turn around and say to him, well, just don't read them. You know, just don't read them. But, like, it's very hard. Players are now exposed, Ryan, to social media. They're exposed to fucking online polls, Instagram, fucking Sunday game. It's everywhere, right? It's everywhere. Like, and you cannot get away from that. Like, and do you think there'll be an element of maybe Derry start to think, like, fuck, you know, I wish we'd fucking Gallagher and Mina back. Like, you know, will there be a wee element of that over the next few weeks? Who knows? Like, because it can creep in right into a group. It can.
I definitely can, Stephen. What I would say, there's probably a lot of strong characters within that Derry camp. And look, them boys aren't used to losing. That's the first thing. And now they've lost two games in a row. So, look, you would think they'll get back down to training and the reactions will be good, but there's no guarantee about that as well. So what I would say is Mickey Hart has a job in his hands here, and he has to use all his experience to try and get this group galvanized, because we do know their quality. But the way they've performed the last two games, I don't think that's a true reflection of Derry this year. And if it is a case of they have been overloaded and maybe some of these boys are jaded, then he has a massive battle in his hands. I'm not too sure who Derry play next. Do they end up playing Armagh? So that's a massive game. Like, Armagh have to play Westmeath before that, do they?
Yeah, Armagh play Westmeath this weekend. So, like, if Armagh's coming out of that with a win, for example, like, they will be bouncing for Derry. Bouncing.
That's it. And that's what I mean. Like, all of a sudden, Armagh may be feeling disappointed after losing Ulster final. Get the win over Westmeath, and they'll be chomping at the bit to get at Derry. So Derry have a break now, but the question is, will these players respond in the right way? Or, as you say, will there be a bit of aggro at training, or, you know, a bit of maybe not too sure if they're doing the right things, etc. So that's where Hart and Devlin have a massive job in their hands, because I think that Armagh game will dictate how Derry's season will go moving forward.
Yeah. And suppose, you know, you two boys had Galway and Kerry both written off last week. You had both of them written off, and all of a sudden now this week we're talking them up. Brian Killarney, talk to me about Killarney. Any Guinness?
Aye, definitely. No, it's good. It was my first time down there for a game, yeah. Stephen. I was down, a cousin of mine plays in the band, the Tumbling Paddies, so we were going down for that. And then we got the Kerry game at 3 o'clock. It's a great atmosphere. Now, the thing about it is the game was over at half-time from a neutral's point of view.
Yeah.
Monaghan aren't, they're not a bad team, but to be honest, Stephen, they looked woeful at the weekend. Yeah. I don't know.
A lot of miles in the clock there, Ryan. A lot of miles in the clock.
Yeah, a lot of miles in the clock, but they played man-to-man on Kerry. And Kerry, every time get the ball. And first, the Kerry players, when you watch them live, you can see every time they get the ball, they're always looking with their head up.
Looking up,
And if they're not looking with their head up, then they're trying to beat their man. You know, there's very little sideways stuff unless they're faced with a blanket defence. So I must say they were very good at creating space. Even Paul Geaney, excellent at just pushing off his man, presenting for a kick pass. And I was extremely impressed with the Kerry forwards' work rate. Now, David Clifford doesn't have to work like the rest of them. But see, Geaney, Paddy Clifford, all them boys, they put it in. So Kerry definitely looked impressive, but Monaghan were they looked like they didn't belong at that level, and probably that's a worrying thing, you know, because Monaghan they're not a bad team, they're not the team that they were, but still I was expecting them to be competitive in this campaign.
Yeah, huge respect for Monaghan lads, you know, and what they've done, Daniel, over the last few years. Like, they've obviously maximized their resources, like, but you know, Conor McManus, you know, the father time waits on no man, like, and Conor's not getting any younger. Rory Beggar's not getting any younger. Darren Hughes, obviously, wish him well with a real bad injury. You know, Kieran Hughes is obviously mid-30s as well. Like, a lot of their soldiers, Daniel, a lot of their real stalwarts, you know, are coming to a stage now where inter-county football in your mid-30s, it's so hard, isn't it, Daniel? Like, it's so hard.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And look, I think you're going to see a little bit of this throughout these kind of, we'll call them qualifiers, group stages, whatever you want to call them, where I think teams will actually pick and choose what games to go after. Like, so, I mean, for example, Monaghan could have gone down to Kerry or down to Killarney and emptied themselves, put in a really good performance and still lost by 5 or 6.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be amazed to see kind of, like Ryan talked about, you can only get up for games emotionally so many times where you get to that pitch. I think you'll see teams picking and choosing a small bit. And that I don't particularly like that. Like, do you remember last year Mayo went down to Killarney and blew Kerry away in the first round?
Yeah.
It had no bearing on the year. I think you might see a little bit of a cold war here for a while with some teams. I do agree, though. I think, look, Monaghan looked really, really poor. And even though I might have had one or two in me, I could even see that. I could see that in the screen. But it was, look, and you give Kerry time and space. You give Kerry time and space, they will rip you apart. But I will agree, there looked like there's a different energy about Kerry. Like Jack O'Connor said last day, championship starts now after the Munster final. They did look like they had a bit of renewed energy and a little bit of renewed vigour, but very hard to read into it because of how poor Monaghan were. Like, it was, some of the unforced errors were criminal.
Yeah, but I'd see what Ryan said there about the head up, look forward. Like, it's something that actually, that those exact words are what we would be preaching to young lads in school here. When you're coaching under age teams, you're saying them, you know, get the head up, look forward, you know, because there is a lot of sideways football played now. It's not good in the eye, but there's something about Kerry Ledge, like, and it has to be the coaching of young people. Like, there is something about their style of football, the way they play football, you know, and I know there's an arrogance surrounding Kerry people and, you know, the way they sort of like, oh, you will see you next September. It used to be the whole laugh and joke, like, you know, we'll see you up here next September. But like, there is something about the way they play football, Ledge, like the way they use the foot pass, you know, it is a joy to watch at times. It really is.
Yeah, and even the style of kick passing that's going into their forwards, like, it's always bouncing 10 yards in front. Yeah. This thing has gone out of the pass. So, like, there's nothing, there's no outside of the boot spinners that are rammed down your throat.
What's the culture thing, Daniel? Is that a culture
thing? I think it is, yeah. I wouldn't even say it's overly, not that it's not coached. I'd say it's just almost expected. It's something that's innate in them, you know. It's a cultural kick pass. I don't know, but there is something with them. But it's interesting, though, when Kerry have struggled, you know, we talk about that looking up and getting the head up. When they were faced then with that 14-15 behind the ball, and if every Kerry player is playing with his head up and looking for that intricate pass the whole time, they were missing the kind of overloads with a quick switch or with a fast transition to one flank or the other, because it was always looking for that kick pass. So it's trying to balance those two things together, I think, is quite a tricky thing sometimes. It's probably why Kerry have struggled at times, like they struggled at times with Clare, struggled at times with Cork, because when that space isn't there for them, if every player is taking a play and 2 or 3 seconds to get their head up, eventually that can slow the transition down sometimes. Now, it's perfect when you've got space and time, absolutely. But I go back to the original point, I'd say that's something that's just bred into players without even being a formal coaching thing. I just say it's an innate thing that they have, you know.
Like, Ryan, I'm going to go back to actually Barney McAleenan. Barney McAleenan was in with Jordanstown as Sigerson manager with Adrian McGuckin for a long time. I don't know if you know Barney, Ryan, do you?
Yeah, yeah.
Really, really well-respected coach. Barney would have known Barney from years ago when I started my teaching career. I would have worked alongside him for a year and learned so much from him. A really, really top man. But he was with Jordanstown. I remember meeting him one day and we're talking about kicking. And he says, Stevie, like, I'm working with some of the best footballers in Ulster, you know, Fermanagh, Tyrone, Donegal, Derry, Down, Armagh. He says, they're all unbelievable athletes. He says, and great, you know, brilliant footballers. He's got a large majority of them can't kick past the ball. You know, and I'm sure they could all kick past the ball, but you understand what I'm saying? Like, effectively, you know, making a difference with your kick pass. Like, and it is something, Ryan, that probably, I think if you want to win in Croke Park, I think Dublin are really good at it. If you want to win in Croke Park, you have to kick the ball. It's as simple as that, like.
Yeah, that's it, Stephen. And that's it. It works both ways. What I notice about the Kerry forwards is they were always moving. You often hear coaches telling you and say, "Ben, come on, keep moving. You're static." Yeah. They're always moving because they know the boys out the pitch are always looking. While with other teams, what I would feel is the inside forwards would nearly say, "Oh, well, I know he's not going to kick it, so there's no point in me running. I'll wait till the ball's recycled to maybe somebody else, and I know then he'll look up." So that's probably a lot of it as well. Kerry players always play at their play with their head up. Kerry forwards then are nearly always looking for the pass. But I don't know why it is, Stephen. I agree. Sometimes maybe Ulster football can be a bit more focused on gym strength, a bit more focused on fitness levels. And then sometimes those wee small things can be neglected. I grew up 2002, 2003, watching the likes of Tyrone's, the Armaghs. A lot of that Armagh team, they were brilliant footballers, but a lot of it was based on strength, power, physicality. Tyrone team was all based on super fitness and, you know, hunger, getting around the man and the ball. So Kerry have always had that tradition where they've had lovely footballers, lovely kick passes, as Dan said. And to be honest, if you go man to man, then they will destroy you. And unfortunately, yeah. I don't know why, but that's the way Monaghan decided to go. As Dan says, maybe they're looking down the line and saying, you know, this game, we'll just go at it. We'll not really put too much effort or focus into it.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting one. I suppose, Ryan, talking about lovely footballers, you were involved with Leitrim under 20s this year. You had a significant win. You beat Mayo 1-0 in the championship this year as well, which was huge for Leitrim. Like, but the under 20 season concluded yesterday, and Dom Corrigan, who's a regular listener to the show, Dom is one of the coaches in the Daily Forum. Dom was writing in, and for Manaman, actually, Ryan, as you would know Dom well, he was writing in yesterday saying that it was one of the best underage performances he'd seen in a long time from any team, was the Tyrone under-20s yesterday. And the football they played, like, I don't know if you've come across them, but I know they played Kerry in a challenge match a number of months ago and hockeyed them down in Kerry, you know. So they were expected to win yesterday. But there's an innocence about under-20 football, I suppose, Ryan, isn't there? There's still an innocence about it that you can play a bit of football, isn't it? Like,
yeah, well, what I would have found even this year, we obviously, as you said, involved with Leitrim, we would have found that a lot of teams allow you to play football. There's probably not the same amount of tactics. There is. You know, you're going to have your certain setups, etc., but probably not to the same level as senior football. So I feel players of that age group can really go and express themselves. And I know Tyrone beat a Roscommon team that was really well structured, really well drilled, and Tyrone beat them easy enough in the last round as well. So I probably wasn't surprised to see Tyrone go on and winning that. But I think from a long way out, Stephen, a lot of people had identified Tyrone and Derry. Whoever was winning that game was going to go on and win the All-Ireland. But look, Tyrone produced... that's the second one in the last 3 years they've won.
There's,
you know, you can't question the quality, and obviously the coaching that Tyrone have in place, whether it be at, you know, development squads and also the club scene. So great to see from a Tyrone point of view, but it just goes to show you that they're going to still be a force in the next number of years if they can transfer these boys across. The big worry is, look at Offaly at the weekend, we're probably going to touch on it later. They've lost their first two Tadhg Cup games to Limerick and to London. And like Offaly, did they win the All-Ireland under-20s only a couple of years ago?
2 years ago, yeah.
There's no guarantee that these boys transfer straight into senior level and you're going to have a really strong senior team for the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, it's a cultural thing too, Daniel. You know, like those Tyrone boys now, like every one of them will be training in Garvahe, watching the seniors training probably alongside them on a pitch to see them in the same changing rooms, the same canteen. You know, that cultural thing, Daniel, is so important within a group. Like I remember even, Daniel, I know, you know, the year that Carlo went really well in the football, the hurlers went really well. I don't know if you remember that, the one, the Joe McDonagh Cup. And, you know, even there's a sense of togetherness there. You know, at times when you're in the training ground and you're eating your food together, you know, there's a bit of rivalry, obviously, between maybe hurling and football. Like, but there is a feel of unity in a county, Daniel, when you have that, you know. And like, it's so important to have that. And like Tyrone, those young boys, Daniel, would just want to play for Tyrone. Whereas maybe when you're a county, like, with no disrespect, like Offaly or Carlo or Wexford, like, same attractions maybe not there to really want to go and play senior football, whereas that culture there, Ledge, is so important, isn't it? Like,
yeah, I can give my own experience of this. In we got to a Leinster minor final in 2007, and the following summer then I would have made my debut with Carlo, 2008, and I was coming from a really like a high performing environment. Galway actually bet us in that quarter final. Paul Conroy was their captain in 2007 and All-Ireland quarter final. And following year then, you were thinking, okay, well, we're just going to be playing in Croke Park every year. We're going to be competing every year. And you go into a setup and all of a sudden you're losing Division 4 games by cricket scores. And we played Meath and in the championship in Croke Park and they beat us by 20-something points. And all of a sudden, you're coming from this high-performing environment where you're really competitive to a standard just coming way down. And again, that's not anything against the teams that were there. That's just... as you say, years and years and years of teams that were kind of getting used to being beaten by Division 4 teams, kind of being used to being in that division. So all of a sudden, their attitudes align themselves to where they are. And that definitely had an impact on me. Anyway, all of a sudden, I probably wasn't mature enough to allow my standards to be maintained what they were in 2007. And all of a sudden, I was starting to meet maybe the habits and meet kind of what was being done in the training field of some of those older lads who were great footballers and all the rest of it in their own right, but had probably 6, 7, 8, 9 years of Division 4. So sometimes it doesn't always transfer, but what I think Tyrone have done really well, like you look at Tyrone's senior team at the moment, yes, they're not firing on all cylinders, but they have some amount of youth getting exposure at the moment. 20, 21 year olds, thinking of Sean O'Donnell, the Canavans, all these lads. And like, you have two under 20 winning teams to come through. I think Tyrone, as Ryan said, in a couple of years, Tyrone could be a massive force, because that will be nurtured. There is no doubt about it. Like, you look at, you think of like the Matty Donnellys this world, the Conor Milers, these lads are setting a standard that every one of those under 20s are going to go and meet. And it's not just a standard in how you play, it's how you prepare, it's how you recover. And I think that is invaluable, because players will, especially young players, will meet the expectations that are set for them, whether the expectations are low or whether the expectations are high.
So what you're telling us is, right, and it's a brilliant point, Daniel, about standards, what you're telling us is Paul Conroy and you shared the field together in 2008, right? He was man of the match yesterday, and you were 10 pints deep and two kebabs.
I know who I prefer to be.
Ledge, some brilliant points there, Ryan. I want to stay on this, right? Standards, culture. Those are the words used last week when Donegal players were talking with Jim McGuinness. Jim McGuinness came out in his interview and he talked about standards. You know, we want standards. Like, the standards weren't there last year, Ryan. Right? Under Paddy Carr, standards were shite. Players were walking away. Players were abusing social lives. Players probably weren't putting the effort in. Players were coming half fit. You know, those standards had dropped. Like, how do you get, Brian, those standards really implemented in a group? Like, it'd be interesting for coaches to hear, like from your perspective, Ryan, even from your own playing days, like, you've played under some brilliant managers who obviously had some brilliant standards, right? But as a player, as you got older, were you trying to sort of maybe enforce those standards on the younger players, or could you see the younger players coming in and raising the standards? Like, what is the environment of a changing room? How do you create those standards? Like,
yeah, well, what I would say is a brilliant coach can come in and obviously create these standards, but he's not going to be around forever. So then what I would say is, it doesn't have to be just the senior players, but the senior players that are going to be there, that are in their prime, that probably feel that they're in a position that they can talk or they can speak their mind if things are dipping, they got to hold these standards regardless of who's coaching them. So the thing about Tyrone is, there always seems to be high standards in Tyrone regardless of who the coach is. For the Donegal boys, it looks like McGuinness got a bounce out of them. Bonner obviously then came in after the 2014 campaign. Donegal probably were still competitive, but they weren't at the same levels as obviously the McGuinness era. Then when Paddy Carr and Aidan O'Rourke came in, it looked like the standards did drop, regardless of what the coaching was like. The standards of the players obviously dropped as well. So I think if you want to create good standards and even let the youth coming along see that, I think your senior players got to be there and putting the stamp on it, because coaches are going to come and go, Stephen. So the likes of them young boys that Dan mentioned, Shawnee O'Donnell, one of the Greys, I think, is called up, that guy, Kieran Daly. All them guys who came from Trillick Club, where obviously Matty Donnelly probably shows really good standards, both a club and a county. And I think the difference is sometimes a lesser county, like the likes of Offaly, number one is the standards maybe not great from the senior lads. So then, as Dan mentions, these under-20s come along and they're probably, their own standards have dipped. Or secondly, do some of these players get ahead of themselves? Because Offaly, let's face it, hasn't been very successful in senior level. They've come in 1-0 Ireland under 20, and then all of a sudden they're thinking, well, nobody can speak to us, or nobody can try and change the way we do things. We've made it. And then they quickly find out that just because you won 1-0 Ireland under 20 level doesn't mean that you've made it at senior level. So it's a tricky one, but obviously Tyrone, the culture in Tyrone, Stephen, is something else. Even in the club game, the gym schools, work, the nutrition, the schools, you know, they've always been, I suppose, that, you know, they would set the standards, and it looks like now the likes of Derry and that are trying to match them, and they've definitely caught up, but Tyrone will always be a dominant force.
Yeah, and when you're talking about standards, Ledge, you know, from a coaching perspective, like, simplistic standards too, you know, like, for example, like, just being on time, you know, having your prehab done, you know, getting your whatever, you know, straight into the warm-up, you know, good attitude of training. The standards can be applied, Ledge, in a very simplistic way, even a club, like, because we have a lot of club coaches that listen, like, and, you know, if you're looking to change the standard in a group, I suppose as a coach, you have to set the standards, you know, with your timekeeping and, you know, that you're probably role model in that capacity, like, you know, but you have to set the standards as a coach, like, the intensity you bring to training. Like, Ryan McHugh talked about Jim McGuinness, like, he's on it. He's on it every night, he says, like, he's on it, you know, like, so you can imagine the intensity that McGuinness brings every night, like, and it's something, a feature of Kieran Meena's coaching and Gallagher and these guys, like, these coaches that are at the top level, is like, you know, they're bringing that intensity, they're demanding more of their players, like, and I suppose in a club team, Ledge, you can do it to a certain extent, like, don't, can you, like?
Yeah, absolutely, and being the role model is probably a good example of that. Like, you know, if you're training at half seven, getting there an hour early, you know, it sets a standard in itself. And probably the key to that, and we've kind of mentioned, Ryan mentioned it, like coaches will come and go, but if you can empower some of your leaders, some of your big players to kind of take on what you've set, you don't necessarily, like you see a lot of these charters and you see lads signing up to all this kind of bullshit, which is rubbish as far as I'm concerned. It has to be internal. It has to be, you can't be following rules. It has to be something you do because you see a benefit to the team. And like, I would be a massive believer in, I think players respond to players almost better in that sense. Do you know what I mean? That if you, and it only takes five or six of your key guys are good leaders and good standard setters, whether that's, as you say, whether that's just getting there early, whether that's their attitude to taking instruction, whether it's their attitude to recovery, whatever that might be, if your main couple of guys are adding to that environment, that then can bring on the collective massively. Because look, we're all sheep in a sense, like, you know we'll all follow the crowd. Like you're a teacher, Stephen, as well. Like, you think of the classroom. If you get four or five of we won't call them the bold lads, but four to five of the buckos in the class, you get them on board with you as a teacher, all of a sudden everything else follows. And it's the same thing, you know. And I think the other thing I would say about standards and being, let's say, a role model as a coach or a manager, is that players will see fairness as a massive thing. And if they see you treating your whole panel the same, I think is a massive thing. That you have the same conversations, you have the same kind of time for everyone. And let's say if one of your main lads needs to be called out in something, that you've no problem doing it in the right manner, or if it's number 28 and everyone is on the same keel. But it's it can be very hard. It can be very hard, because if you have five or six of your leaders aren't good standard setters, it's hard rein that back. And that's where you see, let's say, the codes of conduct and all that coming in, because managers trying to regain that control, you know.
Ryan, I remember my first training session with Roscommon. I remember driving down the road, giving myself plenty of time, you know, to get there on time. Session started at 7:15. I pulled into St. Bridges at 6:00. And like, the car just pulled in beside me. It was Enda Smith, the car on this side's Donny, you know, Anthony Cunningham's just pulling. Like, them senior players, like, you know, those players, they're setting standards. Like, even being an hour before training, Ledge, probably yourself as well, Ledge. Remember even at Carlo, like, because you were traveling, I was always there, you know, hours in advance. Like, I used to get down the road for about 4:30, 5:00, and it'd give me a time to meet Benji or Ben or catch up with the latest injuries or, you know, a couple of players or Turlock or whatever, and chat up the session. It was great. And I get over to Fianna about 6:15 for a 7:30 session. You boys were just coming into the change rooms. Not all of you, but the senior players were coming in. And it was interesting, Ryan. There was all the leaders, and I'm not mentioning them, like, but there's one leader in particular, you would have deemed a leader. Like, and I remember one night rode into the group, he was running late at a meeting. And I used to get down early, Ryan. Ledge knows this story. I used to get down early at about 4:30, and I would maybe bring my golf clubs. So there's a wee 9-hole golf course, and I would speed golf. I would whip around in an hour. It was great for the noggin. Clear the head, play an hour's golf from 4:30 to 5:30, and then 10-minute drive to the training center, you know? So this message comes in, and I was on the golf course. I read the message. And as I was reading the message, I just looked up, and I seen this sort of silhouette in the distance, and I was thinking, is that him? And he was on the golf course, the fucker, you know, but he said he was running late. But like, the players coming in at 7:25, Ryan, you know, for a 7:30 session at intercounty level, like, Ledge, it was frustrating at times, like, you know, and you would fucking, you're calling standards out, and there's only a certain amount of time you can call it out until eventually you have to just say, look, lads, you know, if nothing changes, things are going to stay the same, you know.
Sorry, go on, Ryan, go on.
Monkey see, monkey do, Stevie. So if he's seen you in the golf course, he probably thought...
I don't think it was. I was there, though. I was there an hour and a half before training.
Another thing I'd say is, you were saying it was good for the headspace. Maybe if you had 9 pair of hose, it might not be that good. But
you're coming to training ready to wrap a club around Ledger's head.
What I would say, look, definitely, Stephen, the players got to want it themselves. You know what I'm saying? And I suppose maybe what I would say is, some players don't actually realise what it takes, you know, at the top level. You know, they're coming in maybe first time on a county setup. They've been used to maybe club setup that's maybe junior, intermediate. And then they come in the county setup and they go, geez, I just didn't realize that you had to do this. Or, you know, you had to do the recovery session on your night off, or you had to get the extra gym session in if you maybe need to bulk up or whatever. And players then, once they realize what's required, they either want it or they don't. So coaches, and as we talked about, they can come and go. They can try and put these structures in place. McGuinness is in there at Donegal now. McGuinness, when he goes in 2 or 3 years, like, will Donegal keep them high standards, or will they drop off to where they were with Paddy Kearney and the work? So I think that's the big thing. Players got to want it themselves. Coaches can facilitate it to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Steve, that's probably why it's so hard for smaller counties as well, because when the playing pool is smaller, sometimes the player has the county by the balls in that sense. And then you can't afford not to have these guys in the panel, you know. So, and you can, like, we're not talking about lads not training ever or anything like that, but you can take allowances here and there, you know.
Yeah. Like to be fair, Ledge, like, there was very, very few occasions when lads weren't training. Maybe an exam the next morning or something. Turlick was very good at you know, working with players. Like, you talked about it as well, Ryan. Like, you have to, the one cap fits all doesn't work either. Like, and I think if you give a wee bit back as well to players, you know, they'll give you back a bit in abundance. Whereas if there's no movement from a manager's point of view, like, you know, it can be difficult. Like, but
you see, Stephen, the extra couple of percentage that we're talking about here, you're saying maybe training starts at 7:15. Some boys will turn up at 6:30. Yeah. Other lads maybe only land in the door at 7:00. Really and truly, if you're there early, you can work on things. You can get an extra bit of skill work in. You can get down to the gym and get an extra, you know, upper body session, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
But probably for the bigger counties, as Dan mentioned there, they're saying that 1 or 2% could be the difference in us winning an Ulster title or losing by a point. Yeah. Could be the difference in us getting to our Ireland final or not. While the lesser counties, the individual, the player, got to be super motivated, because they're probably saying, well, regardless of me doing this extra work, I'm probably still not going to win an Ulster.
I'm going to be wearing number 11 anyway, or I'm going to be playing
and we're probably still not going to win an Ulster title, you know. So
we had a physio, Ryan, at Carlow, Ben Doyle, Ledge, and Ben was super, like, and he was a brilliant physio, and he would be in the change room. So I'd leave the change rooms at, say, 6:40 to go out and set up, 15-20 minutes setting up, you know, get back in, you know, make sure I speak to everybody. Ledge would know my style as a coach, like. But what I liked about Ben was, Ledge, players would arrive and be sitting there, and Ben would pull them, right, get your foam roller done, get your band work done, right, you know, straight away. Culture, lads, you know. And but you had to tell boys to do it, you know. And that's, you want to get the situation within a group where lads are coming, they're doing their prehab, it's automatic, you know. It just, and that there, we small things, and it's the great John Wooden, as I say, small things make the big things happen, you know. But look, there's no question about it, lads. It's a much easier sell when you're in a real top setup like a Dublin or a Mayo or a Kerry, where you can say to a boy, look, thank you, no problem, see you again, you know, we'll see how you're getting on your club. And you bring another man in who's equally as good, but unfortunately you can't do that in smaller counties. Chatting about smaller counties, lads, obviously there's significant wins over the championship for the likes of Mayo at the weekend, Cork, obviously be clear, but get into the Tailteann Cup. I don't like using the word smaller counties, but certainly a county, Ryan, that you've spent a bit of time in this year, had a huge win at the weekend, Leitrim away to Longford. Brilliant year for Leitrim, you know, and obviously Andy bringing in the likes of yourself to work with the 20s, Mickey Graham coming in with the seniors, like, again, like, that helps culture, like, you know, it helps the players, you know, the players are seeing a personality like Mickey Graham coming in, adding to an already really strong management team, like, and it can only give the players a lift, like, that's a huge win, Ryan, away from home.
Yeah, definitely, Stephen, and probably as you said there, if Mickey Graham says something, players are going to listen, because number one, they're probably saying, Cavan's a very strong, you know, footballing county, but, you know, for them to win an Ulster title was a massive achievement. For them to get up to Division 1 and stay up there a number of times was a massive achievement. So Leitrim probably say, well, you know, Cavan's not a million miles ahead of us. So if Graham was able to get results and get these boys to a certain level, I'm going to listen to what he's got to say. So I definitely think Mickey would have added massively to Andy's great work. And I think Leitrim hadn't beat Longford in a long, long time. It was one of those things where just Longford always had the upper hand on them. Look, we know Longford's not in a good place. They lost by 20-plus points the week before against Kildare, and we know Kildare aren't firing. So Leitrim got the job done. They're now secure of second place. And what I would say is they're going into the Kildare game with a free shot, really. If they win it, they're top of the group, straight through to a quarterfinal. And if they lose it, and I suppose the big thing for them would be making sure that they're competitive against Kildare, because then I think that will stand them well. They've got a home draw for the preliminary quarterfinal then, probably the following week. But no, the promotion probably gave them boys a massive boost, and there's no doubt they've now carried that on throughout the Tailteann Cup.
Yeah, and Ledge, just looking at the Tailteann Cup, you know, like 17-point wins for Sligo, 17-point win for Down, 24-point win for Kildare. Like, we talked about this last week, lads. Like, it's becoming a little bit like the hurling championship, Ledge, where you're seeing these drubbins handed out. Like, and it seems to me, Ledge, even the likes of it seems to me that teams have maybe decided that just that's Tailteann's just not for us this year, you know. And Jarnath Burton said at the start of the year, it's the most open Tailteann Cup ever. I know it was a great PR stunt to try and sell it, like, but it's not, like, it's actually hard to watch, is it?
Yeah, well, look, it's, in fairness, there's probably three or four teams that are stand out above the rest, you know, and again, it highlights the necessity, like it highlights the difference between all the grades, you know, and look, I'm still an advocate for there's four very clear divisions, and there's probably even more than that if you want to get really picky about it. Like, you know, you could say they're the top four, and then there's a next kind of 12, you know, if we were being really honest about it. But look, again, we said it last week. This is about maybe getting the win for a group of players. Like, in fairness, like Leitrim will be delighted with that. Carlo would have been happy with the performance against Fermanagh. Like that's probably what it's about. But as you say, like you can very clearly see a team that's kind of said we might do. Like I don't know the details of Offaly, but they might have said, listen, we're going to play every 20-year-old, 21-year-old, 22-year-old, or every lad who hasn't got game time all year. That could be their approach to it, as thinking long term for Division 3 next year. You know, it might be the case. I don't know. But look, you can see the games that are competitive are the teams that are roughly beside each other. So Antrim Wexford was a competitive game, no shock. Yeah. And then you have obviously Kildare down or that little bit ahead. But
Well, Fermanagh, Kildare down in Sligo, Ryan, seem to be the four teams that have probably started, you know, the Tailteann Cup and probably taken it serious, you know, like I know Down are taking it very serious, you know, and I know that they obviously want to win it this year because of the failure to win it last year, the failure to get into Sam Maguire 2 years in a row, you know, obviously next year could be Labrie's last year three, you don't know, 3 year span normally for managers, but you know, he'll want to prove himself in the top 16, Ryan, you know, so for Down, like this is important, but it's probably equally, Ryan, as important for Kildare. We talk about culture, you know, the last thing Kildare want is to be in the Tailteann Cup again next year.
That's it, Stephen. And as you mentioned there, you win it and you're playing the All-Ireland. And I would say there's no pressure in one way on Kildare. They're going out and they know that they're better than a lot of teams. But the other side of it is it's okay beating Longford and beating, was it Waterford was the other game that they played? Okay, beating those teams, well, there's probably no pressure. But I think whenever Kildare get to the Tailteann Cup semi-final stages, then these players, you know, got to step up. And the other thing is they probably know that this is Ryan's last campaign. And he's a very well-got Kildare man. So if these players are anything about them at all, they should be busting their selves to go out and give their best for him as well and try and finish the campaign on a high. But I still agree, you probably don't know where teams are at until we get to probably the Tailteann Cup semi-final stages. Antrim and Sligo probably play each other next, I think. Whoever wins that will top that group. But again, before the campaign started, we could probably predict the four teams that were going to top it. And it's, you know, we're two games in and it's still looking that way.
Yeah. Next week, lads, big weekend of football next week. Dublin are out against Roscommon. Huge game, Louth and Meath, massive game. And Inniskeen. It's actually a home game for Louth, but they're taking Inniskeen. Donegal for Rome would be very interesting, Ledge. Very interesting game. You know, and then we have a break in the Calcium. So we'll be back again next week, lads. Thanks very much for your insights this week. Really enjoyable, real good chat about standards and culture. And I know the coaches will really appreciate those real life stories as well. Lads, thanks again. See us next week. Thank you, man.
Cheers, guys. Bye.